water, you have your tea. That's just the record thing. I'm here too. So I always like to open it up with sacred space of some sort. So
that's great.
I see the trees behind you. I see the sky behind you and where your feet are hitting the ground there, just to welcome the breath into the body and to welcome all of your guides and angels, Anne-Marie, and those that will help bring voice to the quality of your attention as we learn from the body, from the heart, this other quality of being, this collective that's emerging on the planet. And that how might your story take its place through your history of yoga practice, but more for this emerging future that's lifting our hearts and minds to a different quality of attention. So just loosening up any stuck places, jaw, shoulders, hips, open fingers, play around with ankles, wrists. And then maybe just say some words of your own just to bring us together in this space.
Yeah, look, that was really lovely. It's just always so nice to have that invitation to come back to self. And, you know, even like brought a little tear, just you talking, because unless we intentionally take that moment, we're so in our heads most of the time and so out there and disconnected. And yeah, just a really poignant reminder of how important it is to take that space for ourselves and find that silence and connect to the bigger picture, the bigger essence than us, you know, the angels, the guides, the universe, the divine, whatever words people want to put around them. And so, yeah, I appreciate you giving me that space to start this conversation in that manner. I think it's really important. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I'm just going to go shut my door just a sec.
Okay.
I love that you brought up that there's a tear and that it lets me speak about the heart's intelligence a little bit more, so that as we open the space together, Anne-Marie, and that being moved, right, and then the tear ducts that actually allow something to be released is exactly that nexus that I'm hoping to find language for, so people understand that it doesn't take thinking about things. It takes something moving through us. Yes. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
So again, I just want to honor the folks at the Presencing Institute at MIT. And we're going to be moving through what they call a prototyping model. It's a way to help understand using the image of a five-pointed star, that once a leader or an emerging group of people land on some core principles and practices, that something rather unique, magical emerges from that. And so it starts with an intention or a vision, and then there's this constant listening to the universe is the language that they talk about. And then it's about finding landing pads, places and spaces, along with core people, so that you can try your idea and try again. So that's the journey. And it's a little bit like the universal heroes or heroines journey, because we fall off, we try it again, we iterate. So this is not about perfection, obviously. It's about how you embodied your way of listening into something that others could also hear and then digest. Got it?
Yep.
So let's just go back to the beginning. And since this is about you, I'd like you to imagine the moment, maybe it was in a practice session or you were talking with people, when this idea began to take life in you, when this kind of initiation happened in you. Can you remember?
Oh, well, I mean, in the very first instance, it was when something aside from my cognitive brain captured me, was the very first time I was introduced to the concept of stilling the mind. And I was doing an Art of Living first course that they do, which is I think it was a 7-day course. And, you know, they had said, you know, we want you to go outside and have a mindful meditative walk and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I thought, as if I could stop the mind, like what? Like it was just, and so we went outside and I started walking and I thought, oh my God, like there is the possibility to stop. Like it baffles me now thinking back that like you could get to some 30 years of age and not even know that that was a possibility to stop this incessant chatter that is happening in our head. That is, you know, majorly negative chatter. And so that was the catalyst for change. And then over the years, as I dove more into a very personal practice, which was very breath-centered and very meditative, and very little physical, and that came. But, yeah, that was the spark. And so I remember deciding in 2012 that I could see such clear transformation in my well-being, and the only thing I could put that down to was my yoga practice. I wanted to understand why my life had shifted so significantly and how, like the mechanisms behind why did it work, and that was the first time I thought I'm going to go and do a training on this. Had no intention to become a teacher or do anything with it. I just wanted my own personal understanding of why this practice had shifted my life so dramatically. And to give you some context, I had been melancholic, if not in a chronic depressive state since I was quite young, adolescence, 15, 16, no specific trigger, just was. And it just was my state of being. But I had been taking depression medicine for 7 years, and you know, I had chronic headaches and irritable bowel syndrome, and I, you know, really dysregular menstrual cycle and just really not vibrant health. And one day, in conjunction with it was the week and a half or so before I started my teacher training, and I realized I am taking these pills every day mindlessly just because, and I'm actually not depressed. I don't need to be taking these anymore. Why am I still taking them? Mm-hmm. No doctor, and you know, fair enough for the doctors. I did kind of chop and change my doctors a lot, but no doctor had ever encouraged or suggested that I stop taking them. And I just sat back and thought, I don't actually need these. And so I stopped cold turkey. And that, fortunately for me, had no repercussions. It was just, oh, I'm not taking them. He wanted me to continue taking them because it made me more palatable to him. And I was like, well, I'm sorry. I'm actually not going to continue taking medicine that I don't need. Because I was taking it because I found no point to life, and I don't feel that way anymore. And I'm not going to take them just because it makes me a little bit smoother. I remember saying to him around about the halfway point, it was a year-long program. It was a 500-hour, and I was in the practitioner stream So I wasn't in the teaching stream. I was just, you know, the key differences were that in the second half of the year, you began to, you know, look at business related stuff and you got more and more depth into things. And I got to the halfway point and I thought, it would be negligent of me to not share this. Like I can't not share this. It's too powerful. And so I shifted over into the teaching stream and came out of that. And I remember distinctly where I was in the car. And it was in 2012. So it would have been towards the end of that year. And I didn't finish my teaching training until 13. So it would have been in that first half. And it was when I was making the decision, I need to go into the teaching stream. And I said, I can see myself working at like a government level or something, trying to get yoga into schools and accessible to more people. So yeah, so that's kind of, those were kind of my two moments. Like the first aha moment of, holy crap, what have I been missing out my whole life on? And, you know, a few years later when I made that decision that I have to share this, this is too important not to take to the world.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you for that. So as we talk, I'll spend some time asking some clarifying questions to further deepen the inner listening that I hear you actually reporting about,
yeah.
Right? So the story of your life that you created the shape of your story from created something inside of you, right? And we know all the research on the biopsychophysiological impact. And your particular wake up or deeper listening to needing to share it out rather than just hoard it for your own personal development, was about teaching. Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you, where, Anne-Marie, in your body, can you track that now in your body from a sensory base of what you heard, not just the idea now, but that it had gone deeper into your system?
It would very much be from my heart space. It was just, this is something that everyone should have access to this. Like I remember reflecting back, you know, and I guess you think everyone should have access to this. And one of the first things I wanted to also do was to go to the prisons and work in the prisons. And I remember my ex-husband, again, he couldn't get on board with this. And like, this is the reason we're not together, yoga mate and his inability to see the shift that kind of happened for me. But, you know, he's like, oh, I don't want you like bending over in front of a lot of prisoners. And I was like, oh, it is so not about that. You know, it's so much bigger and deeper. And I thought there's this wrong perception about what yoga is. So it's kind of a twofold thing. Like one, I felt like, gosh, if I'd been taught these things when I was a young child or a young adolescent, it would have saved so much suffering for me. And everyone deserves this knowledge. So that was kind of what leads me towards like wanting it in schools. But then conversely, I look out and I see this misperception that there is about what yoga is, and just as my ex-husband had said, like, you know, bending over in front of me, I was like, it's not about that. It's not about the physical. It's not about fitting in jeans. It's not about the Lululemon pants. Like it's not just about the physical practice. And I wanted people to understand that yoga is the breath and it's a meditation and it's the connection to self and it's the, you know, it's the consciousness, right? And I wanted to share that. And so, you know, jumping forward a little bit, like with Yoga Mate, like that became my thing. And I thought, if I can help get it into schools, the only way that's ever going to happen is if other people understand the value to their health, to their well-being, that everyone can do this practice, that it's not, you know, limited to people who are a certain size or shape or color or whatever, that everyone can, you know, if you can breathe, you can do yoga. And so I focused on this side of like helping people understand the essence of what yoga really is, in hopes that that would help kind of bring the other side. So, you know, I haven't ever worked, like, I'm not really a kid person. I'm not the person that's ever going to be teaching yoga in schools. That's not my thing, but I still want them to have that. So it became like this, let's, you know, and like, I guess, again, I'm kind of all over the shop, but because my practice was so personal led, like it was, I never went to gyms. I never went to studios. I learned this pranayama, you know, routine, if you will, that the Art of Living teaches. I began doing my own meditation. I picked up a book by Rodney Yee that was, you know, a specific, you know, like he's just teaching different postures and whatnot. And I began just at lunchtime going into a boardroom at my work and turning off the lights and like doing my practice and, you know, like had that hour every day that I was, you know, investing in, and I, you know, was meditating a little bit in the morning or at night. But it was so breath led and meditation led. And I look at, you know, like if you look at like what different alternative ways people choose to like assist their health and well-being, you know, all the scientific studies, the CTRs and whatnot show that, you know, there's yoga and then there's mindfulness or there's meditation, like, and they separate them all out. And it's like, it's all the same stuff. Like, can't all of these bodies, you know, like work together? Cause it's all the same stuff. And, right. And so it's interesting because I almost in some ways find, and it's as years on, that it's hard to put the word yoga on it because people have this concept and this misperception of what yoga is, and it becomes so limited and narrow.
Okay. So thank you. That's beautiful. So I'm getting images of paintings. I'm getting images of people bursting out of their skins, and you know, the way in which you describe your story of moving out of some feeling of constraint in your life, your personal history with your partner, et cetera, your ex. But there's this other quality as I listen in, Anne-Marie, as your intention began to land more specifically in a vision, right? That's kind of where we are in the cycle now. All these other opportunities, your creativity began to get expressed. Mm-hmm. And so part of this practice and process of prototyping is about finding core team members, stakeholders, mm-hmm. and then places and spaces to begin to try out things. Yep. Can you talk about some of your early tryouts?
Sure. So the original idea for YogaMate, and I it was about 4 months after I had finished my yoga teacher training. And no, that's not true. It was about a year after, because I'd had my son. I was 5 months pregnant when I finished my yoga teacher training. And I taught a few classes, just mainly with friends and whatnot, until I got too big. And then I had the baby, and then I was coming out of having the baby. And I had just started doing kind of some prenatal, like not prenatal, but like it was the mother's group here in Australia. So like they were all postnatal, all people that were recently had just had babies. So we'd have the babies beside us. We're doing our yoga and whatnot. And I'd be planning out, you know, what I would teach the next week. And I remember I was meditating one morning and pop came into my mind of if the practice was just on my phone, then I wouldn't have to like look for these sheets of paper every week, right? That I like jotted out my practice. And then it kind of went from there. If it was on my phone, then I could share it with my student and they wouldn't be reliant on me to teach them all the time. They would be able to begin to develop their own personal practice. They would have gone through it with me as a teacher to student, like here sharing it with them, but then they have that knowledge in their own hand and they can begin their own journey with this. And so I'm giving this idea some, you know, is there legs to this idea? And I thought, you know, how do you actually get through the nuts and bolts of like making that work? How do you have all the pictures and whatever? And you can't, you have to have your phone be able to take its own pictures and gosh, but then you could become then it can actually get more personal. It can really get down to like the individual and the practice and that kind of, and I did not know anything about yoga therapy. I remember when my son, when I was in sleep school, the word came into my head, yoga therapy. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. And I wrote it down on a piece of paper, like a journal that I was working on. And it was like, yoga therapy, question mark. And I was like, I'll have to Google that when I get out of this sleep school that I was in. And, you know, so all of this is kind of like percolating away, this idea, is there legs in it and whatnot. And I thought, I need to bounce this idea off some people that know the space more than me. And so, you know, I asked one fellow yoga teacher and she went, oh, I wouldn't use it. And I was like, okay. And then I don't know how I came across Lee Blaschke. He was the president of the Yoga Australia Association at the time, but I don't know if someone just mentioned his name in passing or yeah, that's what it was. Actually, the one who said, no, I wouldn't use this. She said, oh, maybe ask Lee Blaschke. And anyway, so I Google him and I see that he's a yoga therapist. And I remember thinking, oh, there's that, like that's that word again. And I'm like, okay, he's a pioneer in the field of yoga therapy. And I thought, okay, I'm going to reach out to this person. And so I sent drafted up an email and sent it off to the Yoga Australia email address. And Lee kindly received the email and said, oh, I'm going to put you in touch with our marketing person and she'll be in touch. And I got that and I thought, well, I don't want to talk to a marketing person. I want to talk to you. And so she had contacted me. And I said, yeah, thank you. I'm actually after Lee. This is not a Yoga Australia thing. This is me trying to get in touch with Lee. So I get on the phone with Lee. We have a nice chat. And, you know, he's telling me I'm going into Vanaprasana. You know, I'm going into my retirement. Like this is not, he's done that well. I don't know how well you know Lee Blaschke or if you know him, but he has not done that well at all. Anyway, so we chatted about the idea. He was like, oh, I think this has some legs. And it kind of set me aside. And then kind of in this other side of things, I had thrown my name through one yoga Facebook group saying, oh, I'd be willing to be a guinea pig for this case study in this yoga therapy program. And so right, you know, only a month or two has passed since that conversation with Lee. And I get this, oh, Anne-Marie, we're doing the case studies now. Can you come in to be the guinea pig? And I was having some lower back pain and had been for quite some time. And I go in and Lee's the one doing the assessment on me. And I thought, oh, how funny is this? And it wasn't until he was walking me out after he'd done this thing that I said, oh, hi, we were the ones who talked on the phone. And he was like, oh, you know, how nice to see you. So, I receive my protocol from this case study. It took them about 2 weeks to get it to me. And, you know, it was this 20-page Word document. And I thought, holy crap, like, well, A, that's not efficient. Like, you know, the time it took to get to me, the formatting's terrible. It's here. And so I'm doing my morning practice every morning. I'm going to the gym or whatnot. And I'm thinking, I wish I had those papers with me because I can't remember what I'm supposed to be doing. I want to be doing my practice. And again, it was like, this needs to be on your phone. And so it kind of like all coalesced this idea around, you know, providing the practices in a digital quick access way. And I reached out to another fellow yoga teacher who's also a marketing and kind of business coach. And I've been following her from a more of a competitive point of view than anything, just to keep a tab. And I'd probably been following her at this point, probably 6 or 8 months. And I thought, she's really smart. And my ex-husband, Andrew, we'll call him Andrew. Andrew is a brilliant business person, but he will not give me the time of day on this. He was so against me pursuing YogaMate. And I thought, I need someone to bounce these ideas with. So I hired her as my business coach. And she, during that conversation, during the 2 or 3, you know, weeks or whatnot that we met together, she said, you know, I think, you know, it's important to get your team, like people on your side, like your a panel of advisors. And I thought, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And so I reached back out to Lee and said, look, I understand that you're in retirement, but can you help me identify the individuals who should be part of this, who can help me steer and guide this and take it forward? And he said, oh, no, I want to be involved. I said, oh, great. So he gets involved. And that made the absolute world of difference, because he had the clout, he had the contacts, he had the relationships, and his stamp of approval opened up the doors for me to connect with some people who were very smart and willing to, you know, some of them lent their name more than anything, and others were quite, you know, interested in helping the idea. You know, I think one thing that I probably didn't do and should have done from a business perspective is that I needed some people on there that were business minds as opposed to just yoga minds.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
Okay. So we're naming the people, we're naming the what started to emerge. We're seeing your personal story blend with this professional identity that is all coming from your understanding. I'll just call it the efficiency need to have accessible yoga for everybody, right? I mean, that's the collapsing that I'm hearing. So let's just go deeper on this one relative to how your yoga practice continued to be, let's call it the fuel, the stream, the inspiration. And as you reflect now, staying in the body, Anne-Marie, was there a particular teaching, a particular sutra? You named that protocol for your back pain. See if you can find something that continued to be more of an embodied part of your idea as it began to refine and inspire others as well.
Yeah, so meditation, hands down, has been the central component of what connects me to the knowledge beyond my own.
Right? Okay.
And so, you know, the idea behind the Global Yoga Therapy Day, the things that come to me come through me, and I don't take any credit for them. I believe that knowledge is there, and I have opened myself to receive it and have positioned myself to help bring it forth. But hands down, my training was not overtly philosophical. I don't have intimate knowledge of the sutras, because I was very much self-taught. I don't really feel like I have strong foundational knowledge of true yoga. And I did Amy Wheeler's 100-hour Foundations of Yoga Therapy last year throughout the year. And she's just a brilliant mind, brilliant teacher, and the way that she can disseminate the knowledge in a you know, easy to grasp, brilliant. And in some ways I wish I'd had access to that knowledge even sooner, but I also believe things work in perfect timing and that it was there when it was. But so I would just say, like, when I do, particularly years ago when I probably made it more front and center, I guess it's challenging sometimes with kids here at the moment to really get into my practice, but I used to be able to really connect into, you know,
okay,
the bigger universe.
Great. So let's just draw a little bit more specific circle around the way in which you're embodying your inspiration. And I'll just sidestep for a moment. I work in psychiatric rehabilitation, which in the States is very different than clinical work in psychiatry, psychology, or even social work. And the valuing of the lived experience is very much what the recovery movement in mental health and the resiliency practices arrive from. It's the what we do and how we do what we do, not what we think about doing what we're doing. So I'm hearing you perfectly describe, and I go like this because it's almost like you're resting in the nest of your belonging to something greater than yourself. Mm. And if we go to the yoga scriptures, that's what everybody's talking about, union, and you could go on and on and on. And I've heard many stories from that perspective, but your story is unique And I guess I'm trying to get a little bit more of the roots of mm-hmm. your understanding that come and that allow you to act quickly. So we have this yeah. phrase called acting in an instant in the creativity mm-hmm. world. And the no haste, just gain. Yeah. When you leap over the constraint, could mm-hmm. could you tell me a little bit about, and this is for the readers, remember, they're gonna yeah. wanna know, well, she's so different, she did that.
Yeah.
And yeah. so we wanna know a little bit more about your dance steps in this, okay?
Yeah. Okay. So I find that ideas come when you least expect them, right? So always being ready to write down the idea, because if you don't grab hold of it, it will be gone and you can't act on it. So, you know, I used to keep a notepad next to my bed. So if I woke up in the middle of the night, I could jot something down. Or when I woke up in the morning, I would reflect on any dreams that came to me or whatnot. Same with meditation. I would, you know, meditate on a question and then write anything that came to me. When an idea comes, I don't look at it through the lens of all the problems. I just look at it as, how do you get it done, right? And so I can distinctly remember when I had the idea for the Global Yoga Therapy Day, for instance, I heard the voice go, who are you to do that? And I went, why not me? Someone needs to do it. And I trust that, like, everything that I've been building up over the years has actually positioned me best to do it. This vision of trying to pull together all of these different associations, all of, you know, it went back to that original thing of, can't you just get them speaking to each other? Like, right, we're all in this, we're all trying to achieve the same thing. Like, but yet everyone's playing in their own distinct space and field. It's like, can't we collectively do something together? And it would be bigger and better because we're all in it and we all are invested in, you know, yes, you can still have your different, you know, even, you know, so going back to like Yoga Made itself, like when I was having people contribute the articles and whatnot and different approaches, I'm like, you can come from Kundalini, or you can come from Vipassana, or you can come from, you know, yin, or you know, wherever it is, Ashtanga. But there are these inherent core values that you know are pulling from each of these, and we can pull together. So I think the key there is that I've trusted that, like, when, you know, and I often I'll get a shiver, I'll get a signal, a physical signal that I've hit a truth. And, you know, even when you were opening it up and you said, I mean, I got the tingle, like, I know, like, I'm feeling it right now. Like, it's just, you know, I know that I'm in union when I have those, you know, embodied responses that tell me, yeah, you're on the right track. And I trust in that. And I try as much as possible to stop the head. The head is the thing that stops us from progress, right? The head is the thing that throws the challenges and the problems and why this won't work. And it, like, put it aside and just trust that what's come through to you has come to you for a reason, and that you are positioned to make it work, and that somehow things will align in a way to execute this. And it might not look exactly like you picture it's going to be, but you also have to surrender and let go of what the outcome is going to be. You know, and that's probably the hardest part, because we, our ego, our concept of things gets in play, and you have to go, you know what, this is not about me. This is not mine. This has just come through me. I am the vessel to bring it forth. And, you know, I'm just going to allow, and I'm going to release as much as I can what the results are, and trust that I've done what I was here to do.
Thank you. So you did bring up the word trust. And then you also spoke about not just trusting the idea, but having some inherent trust in your capacity to fulfill the messages that are coming through your meditations, through your dreamscape, etc. And there you are in the land of the dream lines, right?
Yeah.
So I just need to say that now so that there might be a little more cultural capacity building, Anne-Marie, based upon the where you sit on the planet right now. I haven't actually said this to anybody else before, but as you curate your own ideas and inspirations, the environment, the ecosystem informs us as much as whatever is moving through us. So I just want to in our conversation as well, so that as we reach even more deeply, but also further beyond current knowing, right? This is what the esoteric traditions are all about. They're enabling us through meditation, through yoga, through pranayama, to sit with something that isn't like us, and yet to be the vehicle, the messenger for it, for the benefit of others. So if that's what's new, right? If you are creating something uniquely new but doesn't belong to you, right? This quality of the emerging future has to do with the practicalities that you've obviously gone through as a business person. We don't need to get into that. But what I'd like to lift up is this continuous stream of your motivation to stay connected to those roots. So I'd like you just to kind of take another walk around the woods in there inside your mind and heart and see who else might have been there as either a purveyor of support or someone who was so different than what you wanted to do that you had to carve a new path completely.
Yes, okay. Sorry, my Alexa's telling me, just a reminder, take a moment to breathe, because I'm giving it a reminder. So right now it's my moment to breathe. So breathe.
How perfect is that?
Yeah. So there's no doubt in my mind that the relationship I had with my ex-husband has been a big part of this journey, and I'm, you know, I'm saying I am. It's interesting you mentioned Australia, and I am thankful that I've come to Australia. I was brought through the marriage to Australia after, you know, we met in Spain, spent a couple of years in Atlanta, Georgia, and then moved back here. And the intention was in my mind to do 2 years in the U.S. and 2 years here, and then we did 4 years in the U.S. So I was like 4 years here, and we had just started trying to get pregnant. This is 2008, I guess. And I said, look, I'd like to go back to the US to be near my family. And his response was, well, you should go back then. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to have to rethink things. And we'd had quite a challenging relationship, you know, always, but you know, it's still a deep love there. And so I kind of stepped back, and this was at the same time, right around, like, so that was in June, and in November, still going through what am I doing and not trying to get pregnant anymore and all that. And that's when I did the Art of Living course, right? And I remembered sitting with the, oh, okay, right. So I can actually be in the present moment. And if I let go of my projections about the future, and if I stop thinking about the past, and are my kids going to have the same blah 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 that I had, right, and just be here, is this okay to be here, and am I happy in this moment? And that was part of the shift. Now he was supportive in some concepts, but not really. Like, it was always just a, you know, he allowed me to do the yoga teacher training, but there was angst around it. And then, you know, I had this idea and I was so excited about it. And he would not allow me to be excited about it. He he saw no value in it, and he did not want me to use our money to start this. And it was the death knell of that. And it has been a very long, a very painful extraction from that relationship, which is still not fully complete, even though it's 4.5 years on from the split. But you know, there was this frisson of knowing that I needed to do this and not having his support to pursue it. And so there was this real internal conflict of, I can't not do this. And I want you to understand why, and I want you to be there and be supportive of me and help me. You're a brilliant business person. This would help your, like, you know, yoga would, you know, could be something that could really assist you in your traumas and your things and blah, blah, blah. Please understand why and be there with me. And in the end, it was just very clear that I couldn't go this path with him by my side. And you know, if you look at what I have worked on from a purely business and you know, fiscal aspect, it has not been a success, right? I basically pay to do my, you know, job. And I remember saying to one person at one point, oh, you know that thing like where you say, if there was anything you could do in your life and not get paid for it, what would you do? I was like, I'm doing it, you know, because Yoga Mate has not been a roaring success. And I look at it from a business hat and I'm like, well, part of my problem is that I don't care if it's not a roaring business success because I'm not in it for the money. That's not been any aspect of my driving force. Making impact is, and then you could, you know, go into some conversations about, well, how do you make more impact? You have to have success there. And that is probably something I still need to unpack for myself as to like, what are my personal blocks to like fully moving that forward. But yeah, this relationship with my ex and this constant, like trying to prove to him that this was a smart choice and this is a good idea and like this valuable and, you know, it's helping people and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know if I've answered your question fully.
Well, we're in the stream together on this one. This gets complex. A lot of people think that it's complicated to find liberation and freedom, right? And that they're supposed to do certain things. With these kinds of questions, what I'm sensing is that, and you said the word, that there's something still that needs to be extracted from your old identity so that the new identity, which is in formation now, that still might need to find what you would call business success or whatever else, more for the universal application of your liberation journey, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just back up for a minute, because from a leadership perspective, Anne-Marie, what you've been letting go of, as painful as it might be, as much as the suffering might be so-called personal to you, when we translate that from the perspective of really being of service for others who are similar enough like you, the benefit is still yet to be known. Mm-hmm. You're still at early stage, I would suggest, and I may be completely wrong. So the link here, and I guess this forms a question, as you further ready yourself to extract more of those stuck parts that aren't useful to you, what can you see ahead that might enable a further flowering of this not from an Anne Marie did well perspective, but the, oh my God, yeah. I can't even make this up anymore.
Yeah.
So this is about dreaming the future into being.
Yeah. I think the answer there is alliances and alliances with other like-minded individuals that can help me take this beyond what my limited resources and ways are. So for instance, with the Global Yoga Therapy Day, a small personal side is that I mentioned that there's still a little bit of strife with my ex. There was a big upheaval in things for us back in early December that have shattered my way of what my world was, and we're still kind of picking up the pieces around that. And January arrived, and January was when I was going to be kicking off the planning for Global Yoga Therapy Day 2020. And I knew that I did not have the bandwidth or headspace to launch that. And it was this real struggle of there's value, there's merit, there's support and enthusiasm. This needs to go forward. And I can't do that right now. And so what does that mean? And I, you know, it's my baby, but like, I was like, for the baby to flourish, I have to let the baby go. I have to like hand the baby to someone else. And again, Lee Blashfy and I've had conversations around that, and who's the right custodian, if you will, or who can help take this forward. And it's not that I don't want to be involved, because I do. I was like, I was saying to Lee, I was like, I can't. Like last year, I poured everything I had into that to the detriment of, you know, my business. Like my business just got put on the shelf, and you know, this pure Seva thing. Also interesting, this is a side thing as well. There was a good bit of reticence to support it fully, because the idea had come from someone who owned a business, and so there was this very, you know, a bit of skepticism around, well, yeah, but you're just doing this to, you know, to make money, you know, because ooh, that's a bad thing to make money, right? You know, and so sitting with these two things in early February of one, my life is still in disarray from personally with the kids and everything that's happening, that I can't pour myself into this the way that I did before. But two, there the idea for it to really propel its way forward, it needs to not have this hesitancy to get involved due to the connection with YogaMate as a business. And so I began to think about like who could be the how could this go forward? And IAYT seems like a natural way forward. And so I began conversations with Lori and John about, is this something that the IAYT could take under its umbrella? And then it's not, you know, then it's seen at, it gets that stamp of approval. It gets that, you know, people supporting it and not seeing it as someone profiting from this idea. And that's good for everyone. And so we've begun those discussions. Interestingly, I've received an email from them this morning. It's been going on. And this email says, oh, you know, just because of everything that's going on, we really value the idea and we would like to support it, but we can't be the leaders of it. And so I literally got that about 15 minutes before you and I jumped on the call. And I don't know fully how I feel about that yet. I remember when I spoke to my parents about it, I said, look, I have to trust that what is meant to be will happen. So I'm going to make the, if they don't want to take it forward, then maybe it doesn't go forward. Now, I do feel like my life is sorting itself out somewhat. And I'm like, maybe I could, you know, put some more energy towards it now. And as John said, if Lee, who's now on the panel or the board of directors at IAYT, if he wants to take this forward, there might be a way, blah, blah, blah. So I do think that there's a way, but going back to your question, I think it's very much about finding the other visionaries or the other people who can work together, because my sphere of influence is, you know, it's decent, but it's not what it could be really. To if I really want to drive change, it has to be something broader than myself. And so perfect. I think the answer is identifying those people.
Perfect. Well, not yet. Let's just go to the not yet place. So yeah. As you so beautifully named already, that your future has to do with these collaborative structures, right? And that the emerging future, we have a big pause button on right now in so many economic endeavors. And so I guess our final question, because we do need to end, I'm curious, if we can hold the quality of something that is not yet born, that you have been birthing through this developmental process called you as a leader with all these ideas, with these relationships, personal and professional. If you were to say, what's still invisible, so that we could kind of rattle the cage of what's not yet seen, right? Because you feel the value, others have sensed the value, but they haven't moved to action. So we're in that really interesting nexus before something actually takes form. And if we want to activate on purpose here now, the seed of this collaborative becoming, let's just let you go off into a little bit of a dreamscape on that. It doesn't have to be the what happens, but the qualities of it already having had happened. So I want to go up into the new the brain. And I want you to see into the future, Anne-Marie, and say, how will you feel when these people have already realized that they, as a we, need to come together? And that's that new land that we're all trying to get to. Can you get?
I can.
Well,
yeah, how would I feel? I would feel what's the word I'm looking for?
Sense it.
I would feel grateful for one, but fulfilled, I think, is the right word, because, you know, as I've been these past couple months where I haven't been able to put my attention into moving forward, where I've been very much in this pause mode for a couple months. And now with the homeschooling and COVID stuff, like it still feels a pause is there. But again, I do feel it's beginning to shift and lift. My sense of purpose has been a bit rudderless, and for me that has been very challenging, because at the heart of my why and whatnot is help people move out of suffering, you know, unnecessary suffering in whatever guise that might look like. And so I feel like if everyone could come on board with the same vision and could work together and could move this stuff forward, I would feel very fulfilled personally that I have done what I'm here to do.
Okay. You know, and what would they see in you while you're there feeling fulfilled that it has happened?
Hopefully just someone who is very centered and humble. And, you know, purposeful, dedicated, I come to this realization, there's this money thing that sits there, and I can remember saying to a friend before I went to Amsterdam last year for the Global Consortium, I said, my worst fear would be for me to get there and find, and for people to think that I'm in this for money. And sure enough, I get there, and there was this conversation that happened in the whole group around, and someone basically saying, I don't even know why she's here. She's a business. She shouldn't be here, blah, blah, blah. And it was like a dagger to my heart of like, that's not why I'm here. And so I guess, you know, that's something that I have to figure out for myself, is this shedding of this world, you know, what is success? Success is related to financial, because I don't believe it, but yet it is the framework of my society, my culture, my upbringing, my family, my ex-husband. These are things that I don't believe, but yet obviously a very small and conscious part of me does still equate success to that. And I know that that limiting belief is part of what's holding.
Right. So in the close here, you started with your meditation practice as the place of your inspiration. And if the language of your inspiration through your meditation commitment has room to sit right next to the commitment to structure a vision that has legs and can support a family or, you know, whatever, or a group of investors, whatever, what's the conversation that needs to open in your heart of hearts so that that meditation place that is what you rely upon can feel harmony with that business place? And that messaging that you create from that wonderful union you is something that's what I hear is fulfilling to you. So I'm stretching into the future a little bit, having heard you so passionately talk about your practice and then the constraint of the business aspect. And so those are energies that I'm hearing in you that, like the painting behind you, haven't yet found a form that's recognizable, you know?
Yeah. It does. Yes.
This is just the beginning, Anne-Marie. It feels so much has been just thrown up for people to try and sort out that what you've spoken about is not uncommon relative to where do we land now that it's all so different. And to take the time, you know, this is part of what we're being given now, is to take the time.
Absolutely.
So it comes to us.
Yeah. It's really interesting, you know, because I've thought, you know, I've written the shell of a newsletter that I'm planning to put out, and I thought, you know, at the heart of it, like I feel I just need to like open up the assets, like just get them out there, let people have them. Like it's not about the money, blah, blah, blah. And sorry, I've just lost my train of thought of where I was going with that.
You were formulating for your newsletter.
Yes, I was. Well, I don't know. Anyway, so I was like, you know, I've been given this because I've had this, you know, I was so active, I was so there, and then this stuff that happened in my personal life that like just brought everything to a screeching halt. I'll be completely frank. I know that John, who I've had a pretty, you know, pretty friendly association with, he had said on several times something in the effect of, you know, it's hard to fully support Yoga Mate because it's just you and you are a single mom. And basically, how can I put trust in that? Because there's not, you know, like it can fall apart, right? And so I think, you know, when this stuff happened with my ex-husband and all of a sudden the kids were with me fully and I couldn't focus on my business, it was like, oh, I can't. Like, how can I juggle both? How can I be a single mom with full-time kid care and still do this? And so I've been quiet, and then this COVID thing happened, and I was like, oh, there's my excuse. I don't have to say I'm a single mom and it's been hard and I've had my own personal stuff, because we don't need to go into that with everyone. I was like, but I can kind of lean on the fact that, oh, the world's changed, and this gives me space for it to be okay that I've been quiet for a few months. And that wasn't permission that I was granting myself, because I had this, you know, these expectations of who I had to be because of, you know, comments and these kind of things.
So that's part of the letting go. Thank you for saying that, because you know, the world is going to depend on innovation and capacity to move in uncertainty, right?
Yeah.
And if ideas still retain a form that was from the past, guess what? They stay in the
past. Yeah.
Stay with that awareness that you're just opening to whatever is supposed to happen next, and that your courage and the qualities of your leadership. Let's just end with a couple more of your adjectives of what is it that you will know that they see in you when you realize that there's this time of extraction and almost extinction going on. What will they see?
Courage. I love the concept of collaboration, and selfishness is not quite the right word, but like just coming from a space of giving, like heartfelt desire for the good for everyone, like, you know, not out for oneself, but like out for the collective, to, you know, to lift the curtains, if you will. And I love that you've commented, Allie, on like how important it is to stay with that, remembering that it's not about me, and to step out of, because I've been very much in my head, and I've not been connecting in a heart space nearly as much, and I absolutely need to go back to that. And trust that, knowing that it will come as it should be, and trusting that I am placed to do that, but it has to be driven by my heart and through my meditation. It can't come from here.
So as you point to your head and you refer to the wisdom of your heart, let's just end with hands touching the heart, and that these hearts that connect now on the planet, Anne-Marie, that you've so beautifully described your journey of, is this capacity that we have to move from the heart's intelligence and let go and extract that which is no longer serving. And to feel the blessings that you've been given in this time of pause, clearing the way. Thank you so much. Bless you.
Thank you so much. This was very good for me, so I really appreciate it.
I'm so glad. Be well. I'll be in more.
You too.
More.
Wonderful. Take care.
September. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.